Chapter 7. Oh, know every one of the men, and stout fellows too, I can tell you. Indeed, I have always understood that the majority of lunatics were of the gentler sex. It is generally so, but not always. Some time ago, there were about 27 patients here, and, of that number, no less than 18 were women. But, lately, matters have changed very much, as you see. Yes, have changed very much, as you see, here interrupted the gentleman who had broken the shins of Mamselle Laplace. Yes, have changed very much, as you see, chimed in the whole company at once. Hold your tongues, every one of you, said my host, in a great rage. Whereupon the whole company maintained a dead silence for nearly a minute. As for one lady, she obeyed Monsieur Maillard to the letter, and thrusting out her tongue, which was an excessively long one, held it very resignedly, with both hands, until the end of the entertainment. And this gentlewoman, said I, to Monsieur Maillard, bending over and addressing him in a whisper, is good lady who has just spoken, and who gives us the cock-a-doodle-da-doo, she, I presume, is harmless, quite harmless, eh? Harmless, ejaculated he, in unfeigned surprise, why, what can you mean? Only slightly touched? Said I, touching my head. I take it for granted that she is not particularly not dangerously affected, eh? Mon Dieu! What is it you imagine? This lady, my particular old friend Madame Joyeuse, is as absolutely sane as myself. As he has her little eccentricities, to be sure, but then, you know, all old women, all very old women are more or less eccentric. To be sure, said I, oh be sure, and then the rest of these ladies and gentlemen are my friends and keepers, interrupted Monsieur Maillard, drawing himself up with hauteur, why very good friends and assistants. What, all of them? I asked, he women and all? Assuredly, he said, he could not do it all without the women. They are the best lunatic nurses in the world. They have a way of their own, you know. Their bright eyes have a marvelous effect. Something like the fascination of the snake, you know. To be sure, said I, oh be sure. They behave a little odd, eh? They are a little queer, eh? Don't you think so? Odd. Queer. Why, do you really think so? We are not very prudish. To be sure, here in the South do pretty much as we please, enjoy life, and all that sort of thing, you know, to be sure, said I, oh be sure. And then, perhaps, this closed avowgiate is a little heady, you know, a little strong, you understand, eh? To be sure, said I, oh be sure. By the by, monsieur, did I understand you to say that the system you have adopted, in place of the celebrated soothing system, was one of very rigorous severity? By no means. Our confinement is necessarily close, but the treatment, the medical treatment, I mean, is rather agreeable to the patients than otherwise. And the new system is one of your own invention? Not altogether. Some portions of it are referable to Professor Tarr, of whom you have, necessarily, heard. And, again, there are modifications in my plan which I am happy to acknowledge as belonging of right to the celebrated Feather, with whom, if I mistake not, you have the honor of an intimate acquaintance. I am quite ashamed to confess, I replied, that I have never even heard the names of either gentleman before. Good heavens, ejaculated my host, drawing back his chair abruptly, and uplifting his hands. I surely do not hear you aright. You did not intend to say, eh? That you had never heard either of the learned Dr. Tarr, or of the celebrated Professor Feather. I am forced to acknowledge my ignorance, I replied. But the truth should be held inviolate above all things. Nevertheless, I feel humbled to the dust, not to be acquainted with the works of these, no doubt, extraordinary men. I will seek out their writings forthwith, and peruse them with deliberate care. Monsieur Maillard, you have really, I must confess it, you have really made me ashamed of myself. And this was the fact. Say no more, my good young friend, he said kindly, pressing my hand, Join me now in a glass of Sauternes. We drank. The company followed our example without stint. They chatted, they jested, they laughed, they perpetrated a thousand absurdities. The fiddles shrieked, the drum rolled about, the trombones bellowed like so many brazen bulls of phallus, and the whole scene, growing gradually worse and worse, as the wines gained the ascendancy, became at length a sort of pandemonium in petto. In the meantime, Monsieur Maillard and myself, with some bottles of Sauternes and Vougeot between us, continued our conversation at the top of the voice. A word spoken in an ordinary key stood no more chance of being heard than the voice of a fish from the bottom of Niagara Falls. And, sir, said I, screaming in his ear, you mentioned something before dinner about the danger incurred in the old system of soothing. How is that? Yes, he replied, there was, occasionally, very great danger indeed. There is no accounting for the caprices of madmen, and, in my opinion as well as in that of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather, it is never safe to permit them to run at large unattended. A lunatic may be soothed, apostrophe as it is called, for a time, but, in the end, he is very apt to become obstreperous. His cunning, too, is proverbial and great. If he has a project in view, he conceals his design with a marvelous wisdom, and the dexterity with which he counterfeits sanity presents, to the metaphysician, one of the most singular problems in the study of mind. When a madman appears thoroughly sane, indeed, it is high time to put him in a straitjacket. But the danger, my dear sir, of which you were speaking, in your own experience during your control of this house, have you had practical reason to think liberty hazardous in the case of a lunatic? Here? In my own experience? Why, I may say, yes. For example, no very long while ago, a singular circumstance occurred in this very house. The soothing system, apostrophe you know, was then in operation, and the patients were at large. They behaved remarkably well, especially so, any one of sense might have known that some devilish scheme was brewing from that particular fact, that the fellows behaved so remarkably well. And, sure enough, one fine morning the keepers found themselves pinioned hand and foot, and thrown into the cells, where they were attended, as if they were the lunatics, by the lunatics themselves, who had usurped the offices of the keepers. You don't tell me so. I never heard of anything so absurd in my life. Fact, it all came to pass by means of a stupid fellow, a lunatic who, by some means, had taken it into his head that he had invented a better system of government than any ever heard of before of lunatic government, I mean. He wished to give his invention a trial, I suppose, and so he persuaded the rest of the patients to join him in a conspiracy for the overthrow of the reigning powers. And he really succeeded? No doubt of it. The keepers and kept were soon made to exchange places. Not that exactly either, for the madmen had been free, but the keepers were shut up in cells forthwith, and treated, I am sorry to say, in a very cavalier manner. But I presume a counter-revolution was soon effected. This condition of things could not have long existed. The country people in the neighborhood, visitors coming to see the establishment, would have given the alarm. There you are out. The head rebel was too cunning for that. He admitted no visitors at all, with the exception, one day, of a very stupid-looking young gentleman, of whom he had no reason to be afraid. He let him in to see the place just by way of variety, to have a little fun with him. As soon as he had gammoned him sufficiently, he let him out, and sent him about his business. And how long, then, did the madman reign? Oh, a very long time, indeed a month certainly, how much longer I can't precisely say. In the meantime, the lunatics had a jolly season of it, that you may swear. They doffed their own shabby clothes, and made free with the family wardrobe and jewels. The cellars of the chateau were well stocked with wine, and these madmen are just the devils that know how to drink it. They lived well, I can tell you. and the treatment what was the particular species of treatment which the leader of the rebels put into operation? Why, as for that, a madman is not necessarily a fool, as I have already observed. And it is my honest opinion that his treatment was a much better treatment than that which it superseded. It was a very capital system indeed, simple, neat, no trouble at all. In fact, it was delicious. It was here my host's observations were cut short by another series of yells, of the same character as those which had previously disconcerted us. This time, however, they seemed to proceed from persons rapidly approaching. Gracious heavens! I ejaculated, the lunatics have most undoubtedly broken loose. I very much fear it is so, replied Monsieur Maillard, now becoming excessively pale. He had scarcely finished the sentence, before loud shouts and imprecations were heard beneath the windows, and, immediately afterward, it became evident that some persons outside were endeavoring to gain entrance into the room. The door was beaten with what appeared to be a sledgehammer, and the shutters were wrenched and shaken with prodigious violence. A scene of the most terrible confusion ensued. Monsieur Maillard, to my excessive astonishment, threw himself under the sideboard. I had expected more resolution at his hands. The members of the orchestra, who, for the last 15 minutes, had been seemingly too much intoxicated to do duty, now sprang all at once to their feet, and to their instruments, and, scrambling upon their table, broke out, with one accord, into Yankee Doodle, which they performed, if not exactly in tune, at least with an energy superhuman, during the whole of the uproar. Meantime, upon the main dining table, among the bottles and glasses, leaped the gentleman who, with such difficulty, had been restrained from leaping there before. As soon as he fairly settled himself, he commenced an oration, which, no doubt, was a very capital one, if it could only have been heard. At the same moment, the man with the tedium predilection set himself to spinning around the apartment, with immense energy, and with arms outstretched at right angles with his body, so that he had all the air of a teetotum in fact, and knocked everybody down that happened to get in his way. And now too, hearing an incredible popping and fizzing of champagne, I discovered at length that it proceeded from the person who performed the bottle of that delicate drink during dinner. And then, again, the frogman croaked away, as if the salvation of his soul depended upon every note that he uttered. And, in the midst of all this, the continuous braying of a donkey arose over all. As for my old friend, Madame Joyeuse, I really could have wept for the poor lady, she appeared so terribly perplexed. All she did, however, was to stand up in a corner, by the fireplace, and sing out incessantly at the top of her voice, cock-a-doodle-da-doo. And now came the climax, the catastrophe of the drama. As no resistance, beyond whooping and yelling, and cock-a-doodling, was offered to the encroachments of the party without, the 10 windows were very speedily, and almost simultaneously, broken in. But I shall never forget the emotions of wonder and horror with which I gazed, when, leaping through these windows, and down among us peel-meal, fighting, stamping, scratching, and howling, there rushed a perfect army of what I took to be chimpanzees, orang-outangs, or big black baboons of the Cape of Good Hope. I received a terrible beating, after which I rolled under a sofa and lay still. After lying there some 15 minutes, during which time I listened with all my ears to what was going on in the room, I came to same satisfactory denouement of this tragedy. Monsieur Maillard, it appeared, in giving me the account of the lunatic who had excited his fellows to rebellion, had been merely relating his own exploits. This gentleman had, indeed, some 2 or 3 years before, been the superintendent of the establishment, but grew crazy himself, and so became a patient. This fact was unknown to the traveling companion who introduced me. The keepers, 10 in number, having been suddenly overpowered, were first well tarred, then carefully feathered, and then shut up in underground cells. They had been so imprisoned for more than a month, during which period Monsieur Maillard had generously allowed them not only the tar and feathers which constituted his system, but some bread and abundance of water. The latter was pumped on them daily. At length, one escaping through a sewer gave freedom to all the rest. The oothing system, with important modifications, has been resumed at the chateau. Yet I cannot help agreeing with Monsieur Maillard that his own reactment was a very capital one of its kind. As he justly observed, it was simple, neat, and gave no trouble at all, not the least. I have only to add that, although I have searched every library in Europe for the works of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather, I have, up to the present day, utterly failed in my endeavors at procuring an edition. End of text. How to write a Blackwood article. In the name of the Prophet Figs, cry of the Turkish fig peddler. I presume everybody has heard of me. My name is the Signora Psyche Zenobia. This I know to be a fact. Nobody but my enemies ever calls me Suki Snobs. I have been assured that Suki is but a vulgar corruption of Psyche, which is good Greek, and means he soul, that's me, I'm all soul, and sometimes butterfly, which latter meaning undoubtedly alludes to my appearance in my new crimson satin dress, with the sky blue Arabian mantlet, and the trimmings of green agraffas, and the 7 flounces of orange colored auriculas. As for Snobs, any person who should look at me would be instantly aware that my name wasn't Snobs. Mr. Bitha Turnip propagated that. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.